to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
If you're drowning and I throw you a life jacket, would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns?
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know that.
That's it. I'm done.
Hello, my name is Tyson Jackson. I'm Tom Allen Hinder on the board. S&P Futures. We've got the Apple report last night was pretty good. So S&P Futures are up 24. NASDAQ Futures up 79. Dow Futures up 55, trying to erase. Yesterday, we were down 29 in the S&P. So we're trying to reverse that. We're almost there. We're down 286 in the Dow. So we will see if we can do that. Do we have Mr. Kevin?
Good morning. You do have Mr. Kevin.
How are you?
I am doing good. You know, every time I hear that no, what are they going to say? No, I don't want to see those returns. In my mind, I'm adding a couple of words. Where what are they going to say? No, Mr. Madoff, I don't want to see those returns.
Well, it's a question. Now, do you want to see them, or do you actually want to have them?
How does that go? That was a Seinfeld routine.
Really?
About reservations. You remember that routine?
Oh, yeah, a little bit.
They had a rental car reserved, and of course they get to the rental car table and rental car desk, and they say, "Oh, I'm sorry, we don't have a car for you at the moment." And he says, "But I have a reservation." And he started explaining what it is, and the clerk says, "Sir, I know what a reservation is." His response was, "I don't think you do."
Well, there's a difference sometimes between the south side and the north side reservation at a restaurant.
Oh, there, and that is?
Well, the north side, I mean, in the Hoyer Palloya joints, if you have a reservation at 7:30, you actually think that you have a reservation at 7:30 and there's a table, like a portion for you. Now, you might think that way. But on the south side,
you might be thinking wrong.
Well, no, at the north side, we might actually have it correctly. On the south side, you're just a group of about 10 that they drop in at 7:30 to keep the line somewhat more controlled. So you don't have everybody walking in. You only have 10 twosomes every half hour instead of 20. But there's nothing apportioned for you. You get there and the wait's still 20 minutes or half hour.
The wait's still 20 minutes. You just happen to be in line with your reservation.
It's sort of like the difference between a north side and south side doctors. I mean, if you have an orthopedic guy in the north side and you're supposed to see him at 10 o'clock, you expect him to be seeing you at 10 o'clock. Now, it doesn't work that way anymore, but it used to. South side, it just means you're a group of 30 to come at 10, and somewhere between 10 and 12, they'll take you.
Yeah. It means you have your seat reserved.
Yeah, you have your seat reserved.
You have your seat reserved in the waiting room.
Yeah, basically. And it is astounding the difference in how people get used to both, sort of. But
in that particular one, Seinfeld went on talking about how you know how to take the reservation, you just don't know how to keep the reservation.
Yes. Well, that is absolutely the truth. It's the now you look at the Apple situation here. They ended up with their gross margin is 44%. Now, the interesting part, Kevin, is when you look at stuff like that, it comes down to what is good for business and what is good for people. And economically, when you say there were no patent rules, okay, and you and I invent, God, Andrew's not even know what the hell we're talking about. You and I invent the hula hoop, okay? So
all right, I'm not that young.
Okay. when was the last time they sold one of those things?
You read about them once.
When was the last time you suppose they sold one of those things? You can't buy one anymore, can you? Or can you? I don't know.
I'll bet you can.
Maybe you can. Anyway, so we invent something. And the economic principle of it is, now assuming you can't get a patent, is that, okay, you get this new wave thing. It's really not that hard. Once somebody sees one, it's probably not that hard to duplicate on a manufacturing thing. I wouldn't think it would be, but maybe, who knows, maybe it is, but let's say it isn't. And but when it costs you, after you put, you know, your line together, it costs you $3 to make. Well, you can either price it at like $5. And this now is, this is in a competitive world. Now, if you were a professor at the University of Chicago or someplace, you'd say, assume perfect competition, assume equal access to capital, assume all these things that don't exist, right, Kevin? So if you assumed all that and you decide you're going to price this thing at $20 when it costs you $3, now, you know you got a head start on everybody. Everybody wants this thing, and now you're going to make $17 a hula hoop. But you also know that for somebody else to get the hula hoop manufacturing business, it's going to take him 6 months, and oh, by here's the investment, and his, because you got there first, his cost might be $350 or something. But now if you price this thing at $20, you can damn near rest assured that the minute somebody can get a factory up, there's going to be some guy offering it for $16. And that 3 weeks later or a month later, there's going to be somebody offering it for $15. And one of these days, probably fairly rapidly, it's going to get down to $5, maybe where it ought to be, or $6, which would be the competitive price. Now, but you have a choice. You can either do that and say, well, in the 6 months I've been able to get 20 for this thing, it only cost me $3. I'm going to make so much dough that, you know what, at the end of 6 months, I'll sell a place to the guy. You know, it could be that. You may say, you know what, if I just price this at $6, which is a dollar over what the competitive rate might be, I could be in this business for like a long time, and somebody might say, I'm not gonna put a whole factory together just to try and steal 50 cents on these things, because all this guy's got to do is lower his price, and I'm back where I started from. So you may, there's a decision to be made there. That's assuming everybody could enter the business. But now we ratchet up to today's world, and our, as Lou describes it, our fascist society, and you've got Apple. Okay, now Apple has taken their jobs overseas, and somewhere, someplace, I would practical guarantee you, as they used to say in the real McCoys, I can practically guarantee it, somebody over in China is not getting paid a fair wage, or wherever the hell they are. Now, their margin here, as of yesterday, is 44%, which is really high. I mean, I think it used to be higher, but it's really high.
It always depends on the product, but that seems high for a retail product.
Yeah. So,
although it's technology stuff, so the margins probably are higher than
I wouldn't expect it to be
normally think of for margins.
But all the other stuff I just said about the hula hoop, none of that applies here, because nobody is going to get the ability to get in this business easily within a year, 6 months, 10 years. Probably nobody. The China probably won't give the stuff to any competitor, because they got to deal with Apple. And these guys can wander off probably into the sunset at a margin that's way above competition. Now, some of it was earned. I mean, they were, matter of fact, a lot of it was probably earned. But right now, a phone's a phone. I know people love their Apples, but the fact is, a phone's a phone. And you would think that if something that costs $1,500, if your margin is going to be, what would that be, Kevin, $600? That's enough normally to entice somebody else into a business if there was any sort of competition around. Now, the question is, how many industries do we have like this? I think the answer is a lot.
There are a lot. Now, let's pick apart that industry a little bit more, because the phones themselves are becoming have become a commodity. So that's not where the competitive levels are. They're still getting their biggest margins, I presume. Now, the iPhones are way more expensive than anything else, so I still imagine that their margins are high. And we could probably go get the product information somewhere and find out for sure. However, there's a reason that they keep rolling out things like Apple Watches and that their different generations of iPads and so on are so important to them, is because that's where the product innovation matters. You can do a lot of innovation with a cell phone, but we're kind of at that part of the market, part of the life cycle for the product, where it is you know, it's a commodity. Everybody has one. You do have to fight it out on price to a great deal. So Amazon, and that's probably part of the reason that their revenue is below expectations, even though their margins are supporting the profitability of the company.
Well, the only one that beat on the expectations. Now, granted, these are lower expectations because this is the third quarter in a row that they've had less revenue company wide. The iPhone revenue actually was 51 versus 49. Mac revenue was 7.17 versus 7.8, so they're below. iPad was, say, even, 6.67 to 6.69. Other product revenue, 8.76 versus 8.43. Services, 20.91 versus 20.97. So the only one it really beat was the phones. And the other ones are pretty close.
But even so, without it growing, and this is the big thing, when the market's not growing, you either have to find new markets or you got to find new products,
or you got to reshape it,
or you could
raise the price and see how far you get.
If it's a cash cow product, and you can support a higher price. You can go for it. The difference is that if you need to find new markets, those tend at this point for technology to be in underdeveloped countries, and you're not going to go in at Apple's price point and do that.
So
now you're starting to talk about, okay, Samsung's got a pretty pricey device too, but who else is out there? You know, your Motorola is that. This is where, you know, Motorola, Ericsson, even Comcast with Xfinity product line. They've made a play into the cellular, a big push into cellular in recent years. One, because they know that the cable business is capped out and dying and starting to die, and that they need to be in the 5G world and start delivering their content via 5G if they hope to survive. And so getting into cell phones is part of it, but it's really getting into that 5G wireless internet device that will allow you to run your, you know, all of your home entertainment, all of your internet access, etc., to do all of that via the wireless network. And you're seeing that now. You're starting to see the ads running for, you know, like T-Mobile 5G internet or something like that. It's all out of the air. No need to bring a wire into my house anymore.
But now, if people walk down in front of your house talking on their phones, doesn't that drop your speed?
In the 5G world?
Yeah.
Oh, no. There's so much. Once it's in, they're swimming in bandwidth. That's not a problem.
Well, I mean, they're not putting anything in your house. It's coming off the air. I've heard from a couple other of my technical mavens that if all of a sudden there's a party next door and there are 15 people on the phone, you're down to zero because they're sucking up the same 5G in your spot than you're trying.
It was like when we used to be at Notre Dame before they upped the capacity, and it's still not great. It isn't that it slows down my phone; it's the ability to get a cell in the first place.
Well, that's
but
what I mean.
When we were there on a football day. You know, when there's 80,000 other people, 80,000 other extra people there, that could be a problem. But that's easily resolvable. And it, like I said, in the 5G world, it's a whole different game in terms of how the amount of bandwidth available and how it's used, and it's more efficient and so on. So there's a lot to that. What I'm not saying is, first of all, I'm not expert. I get how 5G works. I get what it is, and so on. We may have better experts available for that, but it is a really, really different. It uses different bands along the radio spectrum, the build out is that you have to have a ton more towers. They have to be, it's shorter distances, you know, all of that comes into play, but it is also built for capacity.
But it can't be cheaper once you have the wires in the ground. It can't be cheaper than actually just using the wires, I wouldn't think, but maybe it is.
Yeah, don't know. I'd have to go see how it's built out. I, you know, that again, like I said, I'm not expert. I get how it works. I get the concept behind it, but I probably should take a deeper dive before I teach a tech class this summer.
All right, explain to Andrew and to our listeners how, when we were younger, and we'd go down to a Notre Dame game, we were always able to meet up without any issues whatsoever, until the first time people had their cell phones and couldn't get a signal. It was like the whole group was blind. How did we manage to do it before that?
Planning.
Yeah, might have been that. Yeah. Might have been a little planning, yeah. But, hey, I wouldn't mind talking. We'll start this discussion because I think it's a real one. I should go look at my notes in George Stigler's class and governmental accounting, or not, or economics as it opposed political economy. Because I heard some expert lady this morning, and I should have got her name because I'd love to have her on the show. Because very bright. I think I should hand her my notes, though, in terms of the theory behind all this. Because she was going over the Commonwealth Edison, the four people from Commonwealth Edison that were convicted last week of trying to bribe, like, Madigan and his people. Now, I have no idea exactly how the people can get a felony and yet the company is not, when they were employed there, and how board members got off scot-free. And there was a fine, but doesn't touch any of the board members or any of the people up top. It basically hits the shareholders. And
you would think that that's the kind of financial controls, financial-related controls, that Sarbanes-Oxley was supposed to address.
I don't think any of this stuff ever affects anybody who's in, who's either a monopoly or a dual. You talked about Samsung and Apple. Well, with the exception of Motorola being a bit player, they're basically a duopoly, right?
Might be a couple other fringe. I wouldn't go that far.
Well, every time Apple raises,
I think they're the two most dominant in the market, but it's a pretty big market.
But you're not going to, if you see the high end Apple go from 1500 to 1800 before the ink is dry, the high end Samsung is 1800. But there's no competition there of any sort of stretch. And Motorola is not big enough to say, guess what, we're going to be 1200 and our products is good, come over here. They're not big enough or good enough. So it's really not a competitive thing. And yeah, you're going to find some schmo who makes a flip phone or something for $60, but you're really not in the same level, are you?
Well, yeah, you have things like the Fairphone out there,
yeah,
which is totally fair traded. You have your Ericsson, Nokia, etc.
There's a few, yeah.
So there's other players out there that are of substance.
Well, but you got the
and they provide good alternatives for people.
You got the what's the one
and for people who don't like for people who don't trust the sourcing, like me. There are really good sources. Like I have a lot of faith in the purchasing. Motorola's purchasing ethics. That's why I'm a Motorola user.
Well, I thought you'd be into one of those. What's the one for the seniors?
Little flip. Give me a couple more years for that.
What's the name of that thing? The
one with the really big buttons on it.
You know what? Might be something said for that because. The same thing as is your construction people. You don't take your gloves off to hit the button, right? It's a anyway. We come back. I mean, I want to go into without boring the hell out of people. There is some theory to this corruption and who gets paid and whatever. And I don't want to go crazy on it, Kevin. But I'd love to teach a class someday on it. But I don't know who the hell would want to listen to it. the class anyway. S&P futures up 30. NASDAQ futures up 95. We're celebrating the Apple numbers, and we're trying to make it back from a really lousy week. We'll be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Andrew on the board. S&P futures up 30. NASDAQ futures up 90. Looks like we're going to have a decent day here finally. It hasn't been so hot this week. Dow futures are up 171. Virtually everything in the Dow is green that's trading. Matter of fact, everything in the Dow that's green is trading, so that's the good news. We're in Asia. We've got the, see if these guys are all open. Yes, Nikkei, the last trade was 5-2, so they're closed. The Hang Seng, they were open. They're up 100 points, 0.50. Shanghai is open, minus 16.50, so not much there. We're in Europe. These guys have been pretty much going right with us all week, so they're up today. DAX up 129.8%, FTSE up 34.4%, CAC up 41.6%. Yesterday we had the S&P was down 29 and the Dow was down 286. Bonds were up 5 basis points today to 3.40. The Bund up 7, so these are pretty good moves in the bonds. 2.26, Japan 0.02 to 0.42. Oil actually has crept back up. It's going up here. It's crept back over 70 to 70.41, up $1.85. That's almost 3%. Brent up $1.84, 74.34. Natural gas down a penny, 209. RBOB first up day in a while, up 5 cents to 237. We've got gold now. Gold's going the other way a little bit. Still 2046 though, down 9.50. Silver down a penny, 26.21. So silver stays at a pretty good high here. Copper unchanged, 385. We've got Bitcoin up 225, back over 29,000, 29,099. And we have the U.S. dollar sort of, it's actually down, it's down a little bit, but not much. The euro is 1.10, pretty much right where it was yesterday. The British pound, however, is at 126. That's the highest we've seen it in a while, so the dollar keeps creeping down a little bit. Andrew, what do you have for us, Travis Weather Sports?
All right, it is 6:36 here in Chicago.
on May 5th. Starting off with just some baseball today. We got two losses in the city. The Cubs lost to the Nationals. They lost 4-3. And the White Sox lost to the Twins. They lost 7-3. Now over to Chicago weather. Hopefully it's a little bit better than the sports mood. It's 52 degrees today. Very clear skies. It's going to be nice and sunny all day. Going to have a high of 76 degrees today. And over in Phoenix, they're at 61 degrees. 81 is going to be their high. And they have mostly clear skies throughout the day. Now, finally for Chicago traffic. Thankfully, no accidents to report. It looks like on the major expressways, some buildup is occurring, but thankfully things aren't too clogged just yet. Especially if coming in on the south side, roads are pretty clear down there, a lot more than usual. But expect a little bit of delays midway on the Stevenson. So that's all I got. Simple one today.
Kevin, two things before we start off here. Why do I always have, I get so much stuff I think of during break. First off, I'm going to read this. Hopefully,
don't think, Tom, when you think you hurt the ball.
Oh, I know. Isn't that the truth? I had to read this thing about, this is frosting the hell out of me on a Friday morning, but we'll leave that go for a minute. What about, have you been watching the Cubs lately? Is David Ross, is he doing gummies during the game or what?
Could be. Why? What bugged you? I haven't watched a lot lately.
The game yesterday, why with that lineup, which isn't the best, the guy who's been, he has Patrick Wisdom hitting eighth. What's he doing down there behind somebody else?
I have no idea what that's about. I didn't realize he was hitting eighth.
Yeah, I mean, all of a sudden, like Bellinger will be hitting leadoff one day and he's batting cleanup the next. The guy's your fastest guy. What's he doing batting cleanup? He's supposed to be number one, right?
He's also been one of their best hitters, hasn't he? I don't necessarily ascribe to the fastest guy being number one. It's nice, you know, speed at the top, you know, anything that doesn't clog the bases is great, but you know, I want my number one guy to be my best get on base guy.
But you can have all the stats in the world. You have 15 stat knuckleheads sitting there, and all I know is I've done softball for 40 some years being the coach, and one thing that never changes is in a lot of the games, softball too, even though it's only 7 innings, you're a few people usually are always going to bat 4 times unless you just wipe somebody out or they wipe you out and you just don't score. And a lot of the guys are going to bat 3 times. So it doesn't take a whole lot of strain on any kind of brain to say you'd rather have your top 2 or 3 or 4 people. Now, your cleanup guy, you might keep him there because you want people on base when he comes up. But basically, you want your top 4 hitters being the guys that are always batting the 4 times. Or
yesterday was Horner, Swanson, Happ, Suzuki, Bellinger. And I can see why Wisdom would bat behind those guys.
But eighth?
Well, which one of the ones I just mentioned do you want to bump down the lineup?
You didn't name 7. Well,
that's actually sixth. He batted sixth.
Well, it was the day before because the Cub Nation was all aghast.
Okay.
And it was the night.
Yeah, but my question is: you go Horner, Swanson, Happ, Suzuki, Bellinger, Wisdom. Which one do you want to bump down so that Wisdom can move up?
I could have rolled with six. I can't go with eighth.
Okay. What I think Ross is probably doing is he's probably trying to figure out what his lineup's really supposed to be. And they just called up Matt Mervis from AAA.
Well, they got people that can't hit. The right fielder, with all the hoopla, just hasn't done crap for them in 2 years.
Suzuki?
Yeah. He's average.
He's not bad. He spent a fair amount of last year and this year hurt.
Well, okay.
But he's off. He's 274 right now. You know, he's not bad.
But I mean, as a corner,
and he's a good outfielder.
Yeah, he's a good outfielder. But I'm saying that he the first baseman, the whatever guys they got playing first base, that's been an empty position this year.
Which is why Mervis is coming up.
Well,
Mervis at Iowa this year, I have the stats in front of me, has 27 RBIs in 24 games. Last year, and he played at all three levels of the minor leagues, A, Double A, and Triple A. He had 36 homers, 119 RBIs on the season. I've thought all along that when you were talking about guys like Mancini and Hosmer, that they were just placeholders. I also thought, you know, Bellinger could work out to be very good, but if he's the same guy he's been for the last few years, he's a placeholder waiting for Pete Crow Armstrong to come up, who's a Double A now. He's their top center field prospect. In fact, he's the top defensive center field prospect in all of baseball.
If Bellinger goes back to his old form, the kid's going to have a tough time breaking in. And Bellinger was MVP, for God's sake.
Well, his old form when he was MVP, but his form since for the last 3 to 4 years, there's a reason the Dodgers let him go.
Yeah,
well, let him walk. He hadn't been good. He's been pretty good for the Cubs this year, but let's see.
Yeah, well, yeah.
And because if you don't need to fast track Pete Crow Armstrong. And he can play AA this year and AAA next year. That's fine.
Well, the other day he had they got the bags loaded, and I think it's nobody out or whatever. And so he's going to pinch hit for the catcher, right? So he brings up who's the guy who plays some second and some third? He got to get up in the White Sox. Madrigal.
Madrigal. Yeah.
So he brings up Madrigal, who's he's a contact hitter, and he's pretty fast. He's hard to double up. So they bring him up. The other guys change pitchers. So now he pinch hits for Madrigal, which 20 years ago, before Andrew's time and watching baseball, that was okay because you might have carried 10 or 11 pitchers. Now they carry what? 13 or something?
A lot, yeah.
So he's got four guys on the bench. This is only like the seventh inning. He's got four guys on the bench. One of them is a second string catcher who now has to come in because the catcher you just pinch hit for. So you burn that guy. Now Madrigal is burned, and now the other guy is burned. So you leave yourself with one person total on the bench now for the next two innings.
Yeah, I agree with that. And, in fact, in Madrigal's case, he's up there because he's a contact hitter.
Yeah.
It's a situation where you want contact. I would think his contact is just as good as righty versus righty or lefty. I think his contact is pretty good. Thing is, again, I think they're still they're better this year, and they could be a 500 team. They could even be a little bit
better than that.
But they're still trying to figure out who are their keepers and who are their not keepers. Madrigal's one of those guys. They need to know if this guy can play and if they should have him around for the long haul or if they're going to have to cut him loose. Just like, and I think they're probably looking at the same kind of thing, Are people like Mancini and Hosmer placeholders, or are they part of the solution? They know Horner is. They know Swanson is. They just signed Happ to for several years, so they know he is. Suzuki's under contract. After that, you have no idea who your keepers are. They have, they have Velasquez on the team. I think he's good. He's so young.
Morrell's got to play somewhere at some point.
Yeah, so you got Morrell sitting there. You got to figure out which guys are the keepers and which guys aren't. And I think we're going to see some stuff like what you're describing, where they're just trying to figure it out, and they're doing it on the fly. And it's not so much about this year; it's really about the next several years, as to say, who's really going to be part of this if we become a contender.
Well, the.
I think they feel pretty good about their pitching for the most part.
Yeah, I'm reading this thing here. The what happened with the Commonwealth Edison? I hate the internet where you read this stuff. They have what they call a deferred prosecution on this thing. My question was why are these four people basically charged with a felony, as are Madigan and the rest of these guys? All right, but the. This is what they call a deferred prosecution agreement. Where's Lou when we need him? The criminal investigation of Commonwealth Edison is being resolved with a deferred prosecution agreement, which no individual, I think, could ever get. Agreement under which Commonwealth admitted it arranged jobs, vendor subcontracts, and monetary payments associated with those jobs and subcontracts for various associates to high-level elected official, state of Illinois, to influence and reward the official's efforts to assist Commonwealth with respect to legislation concerning ComEd and its business, meaning billions of dollars of rate increases. Let's not sugarcoat this, bleeps.
Double speak is much better. Everybody
the U.S. Attorney's Office today filed a one-count criminal information in the U.S. District Court in Chicago, charging ComEd with bribery under the agreement. The government will defer prosecution on the charge for 3 years and then seek to dismiss it if ComEd doesn't abide by certain conditions. Now, they paid $200 million down, but they didn't pay a dime. The board members, the high executives, including continuing to cooperate with ongoing investigations of individuals or other entities related to the conduct described in the bribery charge. So you get the weasel out.
So Commonwealth Edison is a snitch, huh?
Yeah,
that's the new.
They got the weasel out. They got the weasel out. Pay a fine, which of course the fine has now become an expense, probably, that they can now get another rate increase because they had to pay the fine.
Yeah, is the fine tax deductible?
Of course it is. Well, it's probably some kind of an expense, but
yeah, it's an opex.
Yeah, I guess I hope that the average citizen has better things to do than to read this crap, because if you read it, you sit there and go, "What the bleep? This is insane, Kevin. It's insane."
You get no argument from me. I know that's not good radio, but they, somewhere along the line, you have to hold the top management of the company accountable for this.
But they're doing exactly. This is what, but not to go crazy here in economic theory. This is exactly why this is allowed. There's a reason why that I had the long story about the hula hoop earlier, which probably was too long.
By the way, you can get them. In fact, you can buy them packs of a dozen.
Really?
On Amazon, yeah.
What would you need a dozen?
Apparently, the big use for them is dog training, agility training.
Well, that's right. The dogs jump through them. I didn't know those were hula hoops. I just thought they were regular old hoops.
Well, they don't call them hula hoop by brand name anymore. That's long gone.
All right.
They're
okay.
Exercise hoops.
Okay. All right. So, but what I'm saying is, here you have a monopoly, and this lady this morning, the reason why I would like to have her in my class for an hour, not that I could teach her that much, she's probably smarter than me in a lot of spots, but she appeared, Kevin, to be totally oblivious to the concept of the amount of money that's flying around here and how the rates for Commonwealth Edison are probably way in excess of whatever would be considered competition if there was competition, which leaves a big cesspool of cash, basically. I mean, if you want to stop corruption on fixing the Dan Ryan, you have a pristine, purer than Pharaoh's wife, assuming she was pure, bidding process where everybody can get involved and the bid comes out fair, to where somebody puts the stuff down, they make maybe a 10% return, whatever it is, and it's fair. Okay, it's a profit that somebody should get for that amount of capital usage, that amount of brain usage, that amount of people usage. Because then, if you call up Andrew Construction the next day, an alderman, and say, "I need $5,000 in tickets for my brother who's running for judge," Andrew's going to say, "Joe, there's no money here. This is a fair deal now. There's no slop, so you don't get the tickets." But nobody wants that. So Commonwealth Edison's rates are nowhere near competitive, Kevin. Not even close. So the amount of slop in there for them, for the management, in terms of they get paid more than any other competitive person would in that slot. Shareholders probably don't participate as much as they once did, because management doesn't care about shareholders unless they own stock. But then they want to buy it back. They don't really want to do dividends, because that's different. So there's still money here. So it's not like they're not willing. And for the $20,000 for whatever number it is they might give Madigan, I'm not saying he's guilty, whoever he is, he might give O'Neill, you know, the $20,000 is going to come back to him in billions, or at least hundreds of millions. He's not going to risk 20 to go to jail and maybe make 40. First of all, he's not going to go to jail, and secondly, the number is way more than the 20, so much so that Madigan or O'Neill don't even have a clue as to how much money they're giving these guys, and they're probably laughing at him. Where am I wrong?
Do you have to attend is the question. Do you have to attend, or do you just have to buy the tickets?
Just buy the tickets.
Oh, okay. So that's fine. I would think they would expect them to attend, because that lends it, that gives a air of endorsement to them.
That's probably, if you have a, even, I guess if you have a, well, I won't say the name of the guy, but one of the dudes that I went to, the guy was trying to put this business up. I won't say a marijuana business, but which was legal, and he's trying to get it in one of the wards. So we went to this thing, and I was his doofus wingman, and he says, "Come on, I gotta buy two tickets to this guy's party." So I go, "Of course they're trying to get money out of me, and why would I give somebody money outside of my ward? Even if I was ever gonna give money to the person in my ward, I have no idea." So I didn't give the guy any dough.
Because you want to have influence on the whole council.
Yeah. I'm gonna get a lot of influence for $200 or something. But get a load of this. You wrote out the check to a alderman in L.A. Who was there, by the way? I was talking to him. You know, these guys, you know, whenever you shake hands, you slyly count your fingers when you get your hand.
Yeah, that's it. You count your fingers and, you know, you wipe off the grease.
Oh, yeah, you kind of, you know, you'll slide on the pants.
Got to keep a handkerchief handy.
Well, yeah, well, you're a highbrow guy. Most people in the South Side just wipe them off of their pants. But the so, I mean, I couldn't believe it. Out of all the little tricks I thought I knew. So when the guy in L.A. holds a party, you write the check out to the guy here.
What does that accomplish?
Well, because he can never say you can never say I took money from the guy who's opening up the whatever it was.
Oh, place. I got you. Okay.
And because if anybody ever looks, all that stuff. I think you got to register a lot of that now, don't you? You know, I don't.
Well, I think you know all donations certainly over a certain dollar amount have to get published. Yeah. I think they should have to be published before you cash the check. But that's just me.
Well, that's
months later doesn't help. You know, as far as I'm concerned, I think part of your process for cashing a check should be that you have to log it into a public database.
But when we talk about the issues with these companies and the inflation that is attending people, I'm gonna bet that most people's electric bill is up, you know, 30% in the last 2 or 3 years. Now, none of that is, no matter how many people get convicted, no matter what happens, the last thing that's going to happen, the fine, if anything, economically, is going to cause your bill to go up, not down. So what would the average citizen want? He wouldn't want the government to get paid a fine, would he? Why does giving that money to the state of Illinois help anybody? If these guys were actually...
Well, Tom, it'll keep your taxes down.
Yeah, bull bleep. But I mean, if you were just a normal slob, which we are, I guess, we'd say, okay, this company is...
Oh, you're an exceptional slob, going.
But what would they say in a... You're a terrific short...
You're a terrific slouch.
Oh, slouch, yeah. I thought it was I'm no slouch. You're a terrific slouch, Judge. What would we want? If these guys were convicted, we'd want... the board thrown off and banned from a board for the rest of their life. We'd want the CEO to kick back, like, you know, half his salary for the last 10 years into some kind of pot. And, oh, by the way, we'd like, to the extent of the money we think they ill-got, we'd like every electric bill cut in half until that number is made up, whether it's 2 months, 6 months, 1 month. That's what normal people would want. Why did normal people's wants and needs ever get anywhere with these people that we elect these days?
It doesn't, and that's a big problem. It is maybe one of the problems when we talk about the nexus of businesses and government and businesses with their nose up the ass of government and everything else that we always discuss here, is that, you know what, if the cost were appropriate, we could probably make some of this go away. But as you said, it's just cost of doing business.
Well, one of the things you probably need to do, and this will be very controversial. One of the students in class one day asked George Stigler, "Professor, how could you stop corruption in the city of Chicago?" And this is back in the day when the mayor made 25, aldermen were making, what, 10 or something? It's the age-old circle. We can't raise the aldermen because we know they're stealing every other place. Okay. Then how do you stop them from stealing every other place if you won't give them a living wage? So it becomes the circle argument, right? So George Stigler says the mayor actually has more employees than General Motors at the time, or close. He's the head of General Motors, is making, you know, $500,000 a year, nothing like this time. He said the mayor of the city of Chicago should make $500,000 or $1 million a year, which in 1975 was a lot of dough. I think he said $1 million. He should make $1 million a year. And 800,000 of it should go in escrow every year he's in there. So you actually pay him 200, which is still more than he's making now. And at the end of his time, if anywhere along the line over the next 15 years he's convicted of any corruption charge while he was in there, he forfeits that dough. Because if it's enough, then you actually you're paying the guy. He's more worried about losing his job than he is. If you're paying him $20,000 and he's getting...
Yeah, he doesn't want to lose the nest egg.
Right. If you're paying him $20,000 when you know it's worth $100 because he's stealing, you can't get pissed at him because he's stealing. Basically.
Yeah, I can. But
well, you can. But I mean, a U.S. senator should make, you know, with all the other money they piss away, U.S. senators should make $2 million a year, probably. Because it's that high level of a job. It should be. And he should be expected to not take bribes from people. And if he does, he should have to, his fine should be dramatic. Not to, in addition to being tossed out. I mean, I'm not talking about normal contributions.
Actually, I kind of like that plan as I'm thinking about it and digesting it, as you say it. I kind of like it.
But right now,
I'm sure after I've thought about it for a while, I can probably shoot some holes in it. But nevertheless,
perfect. We'd have to work on it.
But I think in concept, that's not a bad way to go.
Well, but an alderman right now, it's a plus in Illinois, everything is this part-time job crap. You know, where an alderman the tax assessor is a part-time job. He's a lobbyist, or the old guy was. So the alderman. He's making, I think they make 150. You had to look up Chicago alderman's salary. I think it's 150. But they get $1 million for running their office, which is, and they ever get another something for, like, if they want a limousine. Like, you really need an alderman, they have to have a limousine. But they can be attorneys representing people against the city. I don't want that, Kevin.
I don't want it either because you definitely can't do that in the real world.
Pay the bleeps $500,000, and if they do anything untoward, the fine's going to be a minimum of $1 million or $2 million, all the money they ever made, and then some.
Looks like here the highest earning council members will make $142,000.
So I was off by $8,000. That's not bad for an old dude. What do you mean the highest paid? Why is there a spread? Is some of those our committee chairman or something?
Let's see. It looks like it says here the minimum is about like $111,000.
I think if you're a committee chair, you get something for that. Is it? What do you think, Kevin? Is that it?
I would imagine. Yeah, it's probably listed as a stipend, but sure, it's not salary. But
yeah, because I know there's no way to, you know, if it's your second term, you get paid more than the first term. I don't think. Maybe.
Oh God, would that be the incentive? To just park your butt in there forever.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, you don't pay for anything because the, I mean, you get the. So, what do you make of what do you think of the basketball and the hockey and it's been some pretty good stuff, Kevin.
Yeah, what happened with the Lakers last night?
They got clobbered.
I fell asleep before it was done.
Oh, they got spanked.
Is Steph Curry the best shooter you've seen in your NBA lifetime?
Yeah, but it's hard to say because I think there were a few people that might have been as good before the 3-point line. Plus,
when I think of it, I think of Maravich. I think of
Jerry West for sure.
Rick Barry, Jerry West.
But now it is such a major sort of thing. I mean, it's all you practice. I mean, last night I watched the game for about an hour. The amount of plays that result in a 3-point shot. I mean, nobody cares. Only the Bulls guy actually cares about a mid-range jumper. So I mean, the idea, but to me, it's exceedingly boring to have them down by 6 points and then work for 6 3-pointers in a row. I mean, LeBron is 19% at 3-pointers, which is pretty awful. But last night, first thing he did is start winging them.
Well, and you know, there's some math behind that, but you have to make your percentage to make it work. But you know, for the most part. What the statistical measurements say, and so you can design a pleasing game plan around this too. It doesn't have to be crummy basketball, but 3-pointers and then close to the basket. And one of the important things, though, is that winning teams get to the free throw line a lot too. And if you have a team like the Bulls that don't get to the free throw line a lot, and they're not a good 3-point shooting team, that's kind of a problem.
Well, I don't see how you can. I mean, stats are stats, But if you have a certain play or two and a couple people that are good enough, and somebody is sitting there waiting for the ball, and he gets it and his feet are in the right spot and he has a second to look it up and do something, I'm going to say that play for certain people is probably statistically better than setting the same person up for a 18-footer.
Yeah, and I would never tell. And I put it this way: whether you set him up or not, you should always have that option in your half-court offense, so that if you, first of all, you might actually need to take the shot against the clock, but aside from that, when you get it wide open, anytime your percentage is high, you're good. You know,
well,
I mean,
yeah,
that,
but
that's
I'm saying
important.
That does not mean
it's just that you need a higher percentage on the 2.1s to make it worth your while.
But that does not translate stat people into anybody running down the floor, stopping 3 feet before the 3-point line and winging it up.
I agree. And that's you have to run an offense,
and you see a real lot of that, whereas 4 or 5 times down the floor, where guys wing it up in an effort to catch up, and all of a sudden
you better be Curry if you're going to do that.
Yeah, but they're not, and all of a sudden they're down. You know, I mean, there was a game the other night I was watching, the third quarter, and the team was like 3 for 25. Where guys just heaving them up there. Well, if you're the coach, you got to say, unless we have a set spot, unless it's a guy who's ready for it, anybody throws up another three is getting fined or something.
Yeah,
they're just winging them up.
Yeah, ultimately you have to run an offense. You can't just run down and chuck them up there. And I'm with you on that one. That's no problem. Now, if your offense has a lot of pick and pop and take the three, I'm okay with that.
That's, well, the thing what I don't like is the stat dude where somebody runs up like in the playground and wings one up, and I go, that's an awful shot. No, it's not. You're just old. Three point play is statistically better. I go, well, that 3-point play wasn't. That was a
That's. You're right. That's someone not understanding what the numbers are telling them.
Right. Hey, we have maybe half a second here. What regional banks? Is this a big problem? Is it just a way for the big guys to get bigger? Can they work their way through this, or what are we doing?
Yes, twice. Keep going.
Well, are you a huge seller of every regional bank just because they're a regional bank, or no?
No, I think there's pretty well run banks. For instance, I think Wintrust in Chicago has a really good reputation as to how it's run.
What about Fifth Third?
I'd have to look into them. I'm not sitting here with an endorsement of Wintrust, but I know what that bank's reputation is, and it really has a lot to do with. And I know there are small banks and regional institutions that are, that are stress testing appropriately, that have really prepared for the rate environment. I just think there's just a lot of dumbasses running regional banks.
Well, I think
you could be a dumbass because it was so easy to make money in the rate environment of the last 15
years. I think they're caught without enough loans. I think they're caught with bad balance sheets. That are down.
I worked at banks that did this. They could never make the loan nut that they thought they would. Nobody ever cranks it out. And so the alternative is you can't have a lot of cash sitting around. You have to invest it somewhere. It goes into securities. The hot place to put it, in the early 2000s was, real estate. Fannie Freddie, different funding, Nationwide, any mortgage-backed security, because after all, it was mortgage-backed, so it was secured.
Yep.
Now it's been in other investments that were, and now they're finding out that they're stuck long-term in low-rate investments, and they're finally getting pressure where they have to raise deposit rates, and they can't liquidate it fast enough.
Right. All right, bud, take care of yourself. S&P is up 30, NASDAQ is up 94. Be right back. It's Carl Denninger. Big labor number today, by the way.
Trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, one $1 for equity options and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Something happening here.
Hello, everybody. Stocks and Jocks. I'm tomorrow. Enter on the board. SP futures up 28. NASDAQ futures up 87. We got Apple's earnings are pretty good. We got the labor numbers coming today. So maybe people think those are going to be good or something. We're bouncing back from a pretty crummy week. Do we have a Professor Carl?
Oh, you do. But Professor is entirely, I don't know if that's too kind or unkind.
Well, you know, you could be a professor. Hey, did you see the, I don't know if you saw it or not. Did you see the, I don't know if you listened to Lou yesterday. He was talking about the drones in Moscow, allegedly from the Ukraine.
Yeah.
But, of course, most people probably think they actually came from the Ukraine, which, of course, Lou says that didn't happen. They probably came from a suburb of Moscow. But he was talking about the capabilities of those things. It's pretty amazing. But he sent this thing. It was late last night. I should have forwarded it to you. I don't know why I didn't. But evidently, he said the only way he can stop it is to actually jam all the electronic signals around, in the city, which evidently they have the capability of doing, and maybe we do as well. I don't know. So he sends me this picture last night. Evidently they did that, and they show all these cars that are, I guess they must have some cars over there that don't have drivers or something. A couple of them are, like, in the river.
I don't know how real the so-called outcome that was depicted as, but
yeah, here's
the thing with that. So, you know, even your bog standard drone that you can buy, you know, one of those little DJI minis. My daughter has one, and she likes to hike and go out in the backcountry, and you get some really awesome shots with those things. But they have enough GPS and computational power within them that. The ostensible reason for this if you have somewhere you're not supposed to fly this thing, okay, like, for example, over the top of an airport.
Well, actually, in Illinois, we're in Cook County, you're not supposed to have one over a primary roadway.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I understand the argument here, okay, right? I mean, you know, having one of these things sucked into a jet intake on somebody on a short final, you know, maybe you end up with a plane full of dead people and a big fireball at the end of the runway instead of a landing. So, I mean, there's an argument here. However, the problem with this is that there's enough compute power in these things that something that you can buy for a few hundred dollars is certainly capable of flying a course based upon GPS. Okay, and so you can transplant that, if you're a bad guy, into something that can lift a whole lot more, because the, you know, it's the same software and control system, right? It's just bigger propellers, bigger motors, and all of a sudden this thing becomes capable of carrying a bomb.
Well, I'm a total Luddite.
Instead of a camera,
I'm a total Luddite on this, because Audrey's buddy or friend or neighbor, I know the guy too, was on her, but guy lives across, he bought when they first came out. This was pre-COVID, and he was buzzing around the street. You got to control it, and you got to be careful. You'd run it right into a tree. I mean, it didn't do anything really on itself, by itself. Right. And then she has a guy who, if it's a big enough house, when she has pictures taken, she'll hire the drone guy to take pictures of the property from the air, which, you know, if you got a swimming pool or something, it looks pretty cool. And the guy was telling her, well, you got to be careful with a corner house, because I can't get the angle over the street, because I can't be over the street. Plus, I can't be over somebody else's property either. But there are rules, and I know the capability of these things has gotten better and better. Clearly, the military ones, but the way you and Lou describe it, I mean, Lou said they landed on the top of the little saucer at the airbase of the Russians have something like an AWACS. They landed on top of the saucer of the AWACS and blew the thing up.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, is that GPS, you know, consumer GPS, right? You know, I've got one in my watch that I use for workouts, right? And I wear this thing all the time, but it tracks my, you know, tracks my running and gives me statistics and things like that. Okay, this is all good. Or if I'm out in the backcountry hiking, and I need to get off the trail because I need to use the bathroom, if you get lost out in the middle of BF nowhere, you got serious problems. All right, I mean, that is a no BS, potentially life-threatening event. And so I do a fair amount of backcountry stuff, and this is a very legitimate safety device, in that it is essentially, as long as it has power and it'll run for a week or more without being charged, it is essentially impossible for me to end up in a situation where I can't find a road, right? The problem is that that makes it really easy, and it's accurate within like half a lane of road.
Yeah.
I mean, if you want to put it down on top of something that's, you know, it's 10 feet wide, we could do that. And that's consumer available technology today. That's not complicated anymore. Used to be that, you know, in the days of Loran and boats, if you had the repeatable quality of TDs on a particular unit was very high. However, if I gave you a set of TD numbers and you had a different unit in your boat than the one that I have in mine, same make, same model, just different, you might be off, 50 feet or something like that, which if you're fishing and you're trying to find a little wreck, that's actually, 50 or 100 feet. So,
I'm going to really show you how dumb I am in this stuff. Where does the signal come from?
Satellites above the Earth. So
whose satellite is it over Moscow?
Theirs, GLONASS. So there are several systems. There are three in common use today. Ours, which is GPS. Theirs is called GLONASS, and then there's another one that the Europeans have up now. But the reason these things are not very difficult to interdict in the way that the Russians allegedly did is that satellites have a very limited power budget, because the only place you can get power from up there is other than carrying nuclear, a little nuclear isotope generator, is solar panels. So the amount of electricity you have to run your transmitters and computers and such in a spacecraft, in a satellite, is limited by the amount of solar panel you can carry, which is not a very large amount of power. And so as a result, the transmit power is quite low. And of course, it has to transmit over a long distance, so by the time it gets down here, it's really low. And all you got to do is stick up enough signal to jam it, so the receiver cannot distinguish the real signal from the noise. And if you do that, then it doesn't work. And doing that over a relatively large area is not really all that hard. It's easy to do over a point source. If you know where something's coming from, or somebody that's trying to use it, jamming a specific place is simple. It's not terribly difficult, though, over a moderately large area. And in fact, if you remember a few years ago, the Iranians didn't just jam one of our drones. They spoofed the GPS signals. So they made the drone think it was somewhere it wasn't. And as a result, it landed because it thought it was back over its own base. And so it came and landed, and they captured it this way.
Oh, God.
Well, you know, this is what happens when you rely on that. Now, apparently, the wizards in our Defense Department didn't think that having a secondary inertial navigation unit, which, by the way, they're expensive. Those cost a lot of money. You know, GPS receivers are pretty cheap. They didn't think that was all that important.
Well, wait, before you go on, no, is your watch going to work in Europe or Russia or no?
Yeah, because I have, well, first off, we have GPS coverage, you know, anywhere over the globe. Okay, it's not just in the U.S.
So we've got satellites over Russia telling our drones how to go get them if we wanted to.
Well, we have satellites. GPS satellites are not geostationary. There's a constellation of them, but they're not. They don't stay in the same place.
Okay.
Okay. So there's one place where you can put a satellite, one orbital plane, and it's about 22,000 miles out, where it moves at the same speed the Earth rotates, okay, and therefore it stays, from the standpoint of somebody sitting on the Earth, it stays in exactly the same spot. And those are primarily communication satellites. They're other than the Starlink stuff. That's the older style.
But it costs a real lot more dough to get something up 22,000 feet than 17, right?
Oh, the stuff in low Earth orbit is, you know, like Musk's Starlink is, you know, maybe 100, 150 miles out. It's which is why it actually works reasonably well with a low latency. The old style communication satellites, if you have a Hughes dish, which is the older satellite internet, it has a delay of about a second and a half up and down. And the reason is simply that you have to transmit the signal all the way up there and all the way back down.
Actually, right, is that why your cable's so much slower than live TV?
Well, it used to be, yes. It was always kind of interesting. I used to do live hits, all the way back into the 1980s and 1990s, where you most of the time they wouldn't want to give you the back feed. The actual channel feed coming back from the station, and the reason is that you'd be about 2 seconds behind what you were doing. So they'd give you the back feed on the audio through a bug in your ear, one of those little ear monitors, and that came over a telephone line as opposed to coming over the satellite feed, and that's the reason. It's because it takes that amount of time for it to go up there and then come back.
Well, if you
down.
Go to a club game on a rooftop, actually, when they came out with this this radio thing, I'm sure you still have it buried someplace in my place. It was a way for you to be able to turn on your cable and, like, watch the Cubs, but if you don't like listening to Boo Jambi, who I have issues with, and want to listen to Pat Hughes, who's terrific, you turn the TV down and you turn the radio up. The problem is the radio is a lot faster than the TV.
Right, so it's out of sync with the picture.
Yeah, so this thing would give you up to 8 seconds where you could manually sync it, you know, move it until they were together. Problem is, now it doesn't work because it's more like 10 or 12. The new ones, I think, have 10 or 12 seconds. It's a long time. If you're across the street from Wrigley watching in a skybox, the whole crowd goes nuts long before you see the play.
Well, some of what's going on with that is that some of the delay is intentional in the case of live television, in case there's something that would get them fined if it went out over the air.
Well, radio doesn't do that.
Well, radio depends on the old style radio does do that for the same reason.
I don't think the people, like when we used to come on the air, we actually have a machine here that is that if somebody said something bad,
tape delay, right?
Andrew can hit the button and it dumps the 8 seconds.
Right, so it bleeps it. Yeah.
But I don't. I think when you're talking about guys that are doing live baseball or football, I think they let those guys go because you can listen to that in the stands.
Right. No, I know. I'm just saying it's so there's multiple things going on there, but that delay is real. And in terms of being able to jam GPS, though, GPS satellites are not in low Earth orbit. They're out further. So they're like in a second band, so to speak. But there are multiple systems now. GPS is ours, GLONASS is Russia's, and then there's a third one. I don't remember what the devil it's called, but there's a third one now, and that's Europe's, basically. It's the European Union's. And none of them, though, are really very difficult to interdict if somebody wants to. And this is a real problem.
Does the military use the I'll use the term civilian system? It's probably not really a system.
Yeah, well, yes. There are two signals in the U.S. GPS system, and I would assume the same is probably true for GLONASS and the European system. The civilian is called CA code, which is... I don't know if you remember, but back when Clinton was in office, they got rid of a deliberate inaccuracy that was put into the civilians' GPS.
Yeah, you were off by, like, what, 50 yards or something?
Yeah, and it was intentional, and yeah. It was intended to make it useless for
military.
Was
it 50 yards? Was it 20? It wasn't that much, but it was enough to where...
No, but it was enough to matter, yeah. Okay? And that was turned off, but there is a second code that never had that issue that's encrypted, and that's called P code, and it's in the U.S. GPS system. That's what the military uses. But one of the things that has happened is that civilian aviation, whether it be individual, you know, small aircraft or large planes, has become increasingly reliant on this stuff. And you know, modern ILS systems and things like this, okay, they're all there, but the approach and all of the the in-route guidance used to be that you had VORs all over the place and various aids to navigation. Those are increasingly being shut down. If this stuff gets disrupted, if there was to be a serious conflict and Russia or the United States or somebody else sent up a few rockets and blew up the satellites, enough of them to degrade the system, there'd be a problem.
Why would you ever? We're big on tearing stuff down. I don't get that. I mean, it's one thing to mothball or maybe a couple of your coal-fired plants. It's quite another to raise them to the ground and not use them like one day a week just in case to keep them around. I mean, this whole idea that I've been up in a private plane maybe twice. I can't say I was big on it, but I was pretty interested with the guys. You know, here's a spot in the ground here, and we head to this one, and then all of a sudden we turn that one's behind us, and we head to the next one. I mean, I don't know what the maintenance of that stuff is. It doesn't seem like it's all that much. Why would you ever decide to not have it anymore?
It's like anything else. We have the new shiny penny. But the other thing too is that the receivers cost money and they have to be maintained. And so, if you own an airplane, especially a light airplane, well, that stuff has to, okay, things break, got to buy another one, right? Or you have to have it fixed. Yeah.
Well, hey, we're going to go to break here earlier, so we have the labor numbers in. So probably got to break it like 7:28 instead of our normal 7:30.
Yep.
But now, what's the lead up to this?
The lead up is that the employment cost numbers came out yesterday.
That's what I meant. What's the background before we see these numbers?
Good God. So those figures have negative productivity slope for the first time since that series began to be computed, which was in 1948.
Okay. I have a very small... The whole idea of this thing, that productivity was a pretty good number, but when people started offing stuff overseas, and I looked at the way they did the stats, I mean, it pretty much looked horrible. I mean, in other words, if Levi's produced all of their stuff overseas, their productivity is infinite. Well, it's not infinite. They just moved it overseas. I mean, how's the number been... How is it calculated? I mean, is it made any improvements to it?
Yeah, so essentially the concept is this. For a unit of labor cost, you produce a certain amount of output.
I mean, per hour or something, how many pairs of blue jeans
or
per hour?
Or whatever.
Yeah,
all right. The units don't really matter. So the definition of productivity is doing more with less. You get more output for less input.
Labor input.
Yeah.
But you might have had to buy a machine or something.
This is in the labor market. So we are talking about this is labor productivity and costs, okay? So doing more with less is the definition of good things. It produces a mild deflation in the economy that's good for the consumer because it means that what you need to buy is less expensive. This is a good thing. By the way, that's the natural state of all economies if nobody tampers with it, which you know nobody can let anything do.
As if I was Milton Friedman, which I'm not, I would say Carl is assuming perfect competition or decent competition.
No, Carl's assuming that Jerome Powell gets something shoved in his pie hole and has to shut up about 2% inflation numbers. And everyone before him, too.
What I meant was, and we only got a minute, is if you become more efficient on the blue jeans by buying a new sewing machine or something, and the cost of making them goes from $50 to $40, in theory, the price should go down some. The worker should get a little more, and the company should make a little more. But when does that ever happen now?
Well, perfect competition is a chimera, right? Yeah. It never happens. But in general, this ends up benefiting everybody.
Right, should.
Until somebody tries to steal it all, which they'll, human nature is what it is.
Yep.
But now we have a situation where there is now a defined, and it's been going on now for a couple of years. This is not something that just showed up. We have a defined negative trend in that between those things, the cost per unit of output on an annualized basis was up about 6%.
All right. If we're gonna dash here, Carl, but if the way that thing was put together when I read it, it's a long time ago, wouldn't bringing if we brought stuff back from China or Vietnam or whatever, by definition, wouldn't our productivity go down?
Well, maybe. You'd think the answer is yes, because the price for a unit of labor in the United States is higher, right? Would it necessarily work out that way? I'm not sure. And it would be it's very difficult to like analyze this on a dispassionate basis because you also take other costs out of the picture at the same time. Transportation is not free.
Right.
The inefficiencies of a labor force that are spread across half a globe is not that's not free. We do more with automation here. Maybe we have a machine that stitches some of the places on the jeans, whereas over in Bangladesh or wherever, it's a human sitting on a sewing machine. How does that all balance? I'm not so sure.
Well, we'll talk about it after the number, but I guess what I want to get to is how do you determine how efficient you are in Bangladesh to where you can even compare and bring it back?
We don't in that context.
Right.
The ECI number only applies to the United States.
So I'm thinking if you're bringing stuff back, it'd be pretty hard to not have it look worse.
I think it would produce a large distortion originally in the figures.
All right, S&P futures up 29, Nasdaq futures up 8. We come back, we'll have all these numbers.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you! Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck, get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with their choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and try to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Well, everyone, pick Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tomo Andrew on the board. It's going to be an abbreviated number here. We've got S&P futures up 23, NASDAQ futures up 59. We'll see what the bonds are doing here real quick. They're kind of up 9 basis points, 3.44. Andrew, why don't you give sports weather traffic real quick, because this other stuff is on delay, so we're going to talk to Carl first.
All right, sounds good. Starting off with some sports, just two pretty simple things in Chicago today. Well, yesterday. It's the Cubs lost to the Nationals, and they lost 4-3. And the White Sox lost to the Twins 7-3. Over to Chicago weather, it is currently 52 degrees. Going to have sunny, very clear skies today. And going to have a high of 77 for the temperature. Over in Phoenix, they're at 61 degrees, currently at mostly clear skies, and they're going to have a high of 81 degrees today. Now, finally, for Chicago traffic, looks like not too much has changed. It's our first hour. We have some little bit of traffic. It's heavy on the Eisenhower if you're coming in from the north side on the Kennedy. And if you're coming in on the outbound, looks like you can look out for some traffic also on the Eisenhower and a little bit on the Kennedy. But that's about it. Did a little bit more than usual for a Friday, but still thankfully no major accidents, just traffic.
I'm looking at, again, my chump page here, the A1 employment thing. Connor, it looks like the reversal that we had been cheering of people in the "we don't know what they're doing" column coming down and actually re-entering the labor force had an abrupt turnaround last month.
Sure did. Yeah, about 730,000 worth. That's a big number.
Well, on this page, it's 210, but still, it's a lot.
Well, I'm looking at unadjusted. I always do, but still, I mean, that's a large number. The unadjusted month over month was plus 334, which shockingly is relatively close to the reported establishment number.
The adjusted, I've got like 100 and some.
I mean, normally that, those figures are wildly divergent, okay? Not so much this month. That's reasonably close. I mean, it's not exact, but it's reasonably close. There's a couple of very interesting things inside there. You picked up on the first one immediately, which is the couch surfer figures went up substantially. And the other thing that I think is when you look at that we had 330,000 unadjusted adds to jobs, while you at the same time had 733,000 people decide to surf the couch. That's a million.
Well, right? it's hard to go with the 330 number when it looks like the labor force, according to this, actually shrunk.
So the employment participation ratio went up by one tick. And last month it was up 4. It's up one tick to 60.5. So, I mean, that's, at least that's moving in the right direction.
Well,
right?
This has This is adjusted, but this is somewhat confusing to me because the total amount of people the amount of the population is up 170. All right.
Right.
Now you've got the people in the labor force are actually down. Okay, a little bit.
Right. Well, yeah, MILF number went up. Yeah.
And from there, there's a few extra people. There's 100,000 people extra working. There's 100,000 people less. They're searching for employment, and there's 300,000 people higher that we don't know what they're doing, which is kind of odd numbers.
Yeah, there's also a rather interesting there's a trend break in the average hourly and weekly earnings number table as well, which I think is potentially quite important, and it plays into this employment cost index thing that we got yesterday. The productivity and cost number, costs were up, productivity is down, and productivity is an inverse on productivity and costs, right? So if you produce more with the same amount, then the output per unit of dollars spent for input in labor goes down. So when productivity goes down, that's a double whammy. We have had a very nasty trend for the last several months in the lower tiers of the average hourly and weekly earnings, where while hourly earnings have gone up, and they're continuing to a little bit, we've seen a negative trend in weekly earnings. And this is at the lower ends of the economic strata, particularly in leisure, hospitality, and other services, which are the two, those are the two bottom tiers. And that is now going up a little bit. Okay, not a lot, but $2 on the weekly check size in leisure and hospitality, but up is up as opposed to down, and it's been going down. So
when you look at the hourly hours worked, is that planned hours work or is that actual?
Well, it's actual. Well, see, here's the thing: is you always hear people talking about the fact that the hourly earnings number has been quite strong, especially in the lower economic strata, in the leisure, hospitality.
Well, we're ahead and moved for 20 years, so finally it's moved a little bit.
Yeah, the problem is, I don't care how much you get paid per hour. What you care about is how big the check is at the end of the week.
Right.
Okay. So if, and Obamacare did a real number on people in this industry in general, because the response to the potential of being fined was that if you were in that area where that was a possibility, they would not allow you. If the limit was 32 hours where they had to start providing benefits. The problem with that is, in a retail environment, you never know when somebody's going to call out. Right? You just never know when it's going to happen if you're a manager. You can't have people go over that limit, so what you end up doing is, well, I got to have the possibility of this guy working a double, therefore I'm not going to give him more than 28. He doesn't get 32, he gets 28. Okay? Okay. Because if he goes over, I get fined for not giving him health insurance. So as a result, you had all of the people in that area that basically got screwed out of what amounted to an 8-hour day, right, every week. Right, and your hourly earnings went up, but your weekly check went down.
Well, if you're in Portage, Indiana, and you're 5 minutes in the local Walmart, it's probably a pain in the butt, but it's not the same as paying to come over to Skyway Bridge, paying to park downtown, and somebody saying, it's not busy today, go home, I'm only paying you for 4 hours.
Oh, listen, when my daughter was younger and I was living in Northwest Florida, we had a toll bridge, and all the retail and hospitality-type jobs were on the other side of the bridge. Okay? Well, both directions was $7.
That's a lot.
Well, that's, I mean, that's...
It's an hour. Hey.
That's an hour of labor, right?
Yeah.
So, so if you get, even if you're getting a four-hour shift, boy, that bites. If you get eight, well, okay, it's a little less. But what happens when you go in there and then the guy cuts you after three?
Yeah, you're screwed.
Yeah.
But how does that get picked up? I mean, I noticed, who knows what happens now, but when... We used to go down to Portage once in a while. Of course, I'm up early on Sunday morning. I'm at the Walmart. I'm getting the car washed and all this other stuff. And so I asked the lady in Walmart, there's nobody in there at that hour. I said, how many hours a week? She goes, well, what do you mean? I go, well, she says, sometimes if it's slow on Wednesday, they tell us not to come in on Thursday. And I go, how do you plan on that? She goes, it's pretty tough.
You don't, right? Well, and that is the problem that then arises is that, so then if you're the schlub that's in that situation, and you say, well, I need to go get a second job, because somehow I got to pay the rent. Okay, that's nice. Right up until the two of them clash because one of them just sent you home.
Yeah.
All right. So how do you, or worse, you're there. The guy who's supposed to come in and relieve you calls in because he was out drinking last night or whatever. And now your boss says, oh, by the way, you're pulling a double today. Well, guess what? You're scheduled on your other job at the same time.
Well, that's when they say, that's when you say, if you don't want me to have to be obligated to this other job, you better give me a raise.
Yeah, you know what they do is they say you're fired.
Yeah.
Right. So
well, I guess what is Walmart report that Andrew's just worked 32 hours, or do they say on a Wednesday he's scheduled to work 40? What goes in, I guess, is my question.
Well, what goes in is what you in the employment cost index is what you actually worked.
Okay.
These distortions, I don't know if it's actually unexpected consequences of these policies or if they're expected policies and, expected consequences, they don't care. But they are certainly the consequences of these kinds of policies. Whether they're intentional or not, I have no idea.
Well, when I guess I'll ask you this question, when are the talking heads and all the people that want to keep basically peeing on your shoes and telling you it's raining or something, but when are they going to figure out, and you've been probably the most articulate at this, when are they going to figure out that the idea of a, quote, recession is whether you're doing better or worse than you were doing before? And if you have a job in, say you're a professor at Eastern Illinois, they just finished their, full professors or whatever, they just got their contract together, Carl, and it was 14% raise over the next 4 years, I think. Well, with this inflation rate, you've destined yourself to a recession, right? In terms of
yeah.
But when are the CEOs that these guys are interviewing and the guys that are making too much money interviewing people? In my mind, of course, I don't want to drop back and most people that anybody making more than you is making too much. I'm not like that, but. When are they going to realize that right now we're at a situation where it's not the unemployment rate, it's the fact that people are employed in one, maybe two and a half jobs and are still falling behind? This is a whole new world of economics, but it's not that hard to notice. It should be noticeable very easily for somebody who thinks he's an economist on TV.
Yeah. Well, but they... Nobody notices what you're paid to ignore.
True. I mean, Nancy, I don't know if you're listening to her on Monday. I mean, she's got her finger on the pulse of just about everybody. When you start doing mortgages, that you basically got to, drop your pants and show her, right?
Right.
And she said, what the hell she referred to it as, because you always talk about, for a long time, we dealt with the not making enough money deal by having two people go to work.
Right.
Okay, but at some point, unless you're going
to... Well, now you're out of that because all the two people went to work.
Yeah, well, unless you're going to put the new baby, taking pictures for movies or something and getting paid for that and putting him to work, him or her to work. She goes, you're actually in some families now, you're reaching the, not two and a half, but two point something to where, I'm not stereotyping, but the wife might be a nurse and the husband a CPA or the other way around. And all of a sudden now, from January to April, he or she is doing taxes for people at home on a Saturday. So they actually have like a third gig.
Yeah, so, one of the things that is, and I've been beating on this drum since things really started to accelerate when all the COVID crazy policy stuff began, is that we were already pushing, before that, we were already pushing the point where the basic requirements of a family or just a couple being together were getting very hard to meet between two adults. And then you turn around and you put another 50% on house prices which of course, I don't know how many of your listeners have gotten their insurance renewals for the next year. Guess what happens when the value of your house goes up by 50%? Well, guess what? The cost of insuring it against a total loss goes up by about 50%.
Well, when a cost replacing a roof starts hitting 85G.
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. All of a sudden, this kind of stuff, no longer looks somewhat reasonable. It now starts to end up being outrageously confiscatory.
Yep.
And then you have the tax authorities that, when it comes to property taxes, oh boy, do they love this.
Oh yeah.
Right? Because, your assessment, and go ahead and try to challenge it. It's pointless because there really are comps. The guy across the street really did sell his house for that much money. And it really is a comparable property to the one you have. Yeah. And so, yeah, you can challenge, but you're going to lose. And, and that's just the way it goes. So you've got that kind of thing going on. You've got the same sort of thing happening where you've got, we just had this craziness. Hyundai and Kia, decided that they'd save $5 by not putting chips in the keys of their cars for a number of years. And then they doubled down on stupid by not putting any kind of a metal cylinder around the ignition switch. So, you could take, I just had to tear the column apart on my daughter's car because we had to get into the dash to change the stereo and things like this. And there's a big metal cylinder around the outside of the ignition switch. Okay, so if you go try to break the switch to steal the car, you got two problems. One is that's not plastic, and that's not going to be all that easy to do without destroying the wiring, in which case it doesn't work. And then secondly, there's a chip in the key. So if you do manage to get it to turn, it starts, and 2 seconds later it dies because there's no key. Well, Kia and Hyundai left these nice little features that cost $2 off their cars. Therefore, they get stolen a lot. And guess what? The insurance companies, rather than saying, we're not insuring those, what did they do? They jacked everybody else's price.
Well, I mean, Bernie Madoff, which was a hedge fund and not protected by SIPC, they decided to protect those people in arrears in SIPC and raise the rates to every other firm like PTI to pay for it.
Well, this is the sort of insanity, though, that runs through things. And you look at the places. I mean, I know people that still live in Florida. I owned boats for a long time. I gave up because Florida made the fishing regulations to the point that it wasn't worth it for me to have a boat because I like to fish. But if you can't keep any fish, then, that doesn't work out so good. Now DeSantis is trumpeting that, we've recovered this fishery and these, a little late guy. I mean, 10 years ago, I started divesting myself of watercraft and sold the last one a couple of years before I moved. And why? Because I wasn't going to spend that kind of money on the fuel and the slip fees and the insurance, everything else, and go fishing. And I can't actually eat anything.
I thought there was a I know I haven't seen. Didn't we blow up the redfish population in Louisiana? You still can't buy redfish, can you?
There's redfish have always been a slot limit thing in Florida. I don't know about Louisiana, but in Florida it's always been a slot limit thing. And the problem is that There's plenty of fish that are just too delicious for their own good. Okay. Swords are one of those, by the way. I happen to think they're probably the most delectable thing out there, but they're a little bit difficult to catch because they're deep water and they bite at night. So if you want to go fish for those, you need to go where there's deep water and you have to do it at night, and in a little boat that's a little on the hazardous side, right? So, so larger boat is part of that game. But the thing that happens then, though, is that now you have all these distortions that governments put into into the process, and then they whine and cry when all of a sudden people say, well, we're not doing that anymore. And then on top of that, you have all the insurance games that go on and have gone on the entire time I lived in Florida. There was it wasn't really a joke, it was the truth, is that people that didn't want their boats anymore but didn't want to accept the fact that when they sold them, hey, guess what? They depreciate faster than Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah.
They would turn around and arrange to not correctly secure them when a storm was coming. They basically sold them to the insurance company. Well, needless to say, the correct thing to do is to go after the people that do that. But they didn't.
No, no.
Instead, what they did was they raised everybody else's rates to cover it. And so then you end up in a situation where eventually, you know, we just had that storm last year that went through near Naples and stuff.
But the amount of boats and people's property and everything, it was bizarre.
Well, and people left them there, okay? Yeah. I mean, hurricanes are not like tornadoes. You get a week's worth of warning. You can go somewhere. You can leave and protect your property if you care to. They did not.
There were people, the amount of cars got wrecked. One building my
Dude, I know. Why would you leave a car where it could be flooded in a garage?
Well, worse than that, this lady, well, my brother's, his wife, has a cousin down there, and it is maybe 12-story building, and she's like on the 8th floor, and it's, you know, there's the beach, there's a, you know, some stuff across the street. You know more about this than me in Florida. Then there's the road down the beach. Then there's like a parking lot, and then there's the building. So there's stuff. Right. You're hundreds of yards from the water, but it's still in a hurricane, you're pretty close. Well, all the idiots leave their car in the lot. So when the thing comes in, the water's up to the fourth floor, banging the cars into the building, and they totally destroyed the building structurally with the cars banging in it, not the water.
Yeah.
So the cars are wrecked, and my buddy, one of my neighborhood buddies and an attorney, terrific guy. He's older than me, and all his buddies they all got a place down in Florida, right? But one guy moves his two cars, like a Jeep, and then he's got a midlife crisis convertible car. I don't know what the hell it was. He moves them inland, you know, not that far, but, you know, inland.
Right.
The garage that he rented to put them in is gone. So are the cars.
Oh, no.
He goes, they must be out in the swamp somewhere. I mean, where does that stuff go?
It goes.
But, I mean, it's got to be someplace. I mean, I used to essentially share a spot in the OEX with for 20 years, a guy named Ronnie. Terrific guy. His parents had a spot down in the Redneck, I won't say Redneck Riviera. It was down like Biloxi. But they're across the street from the beach and so forth. You know, back a little bit. It's this condo complex, really nice apartments, because he'd go down there and take a picture, show me. And all of a sudden, what was the huge hurricane? This has to be like 20 years ago, whacked right into that area. It was right after the one that hit New Orleans. It was like the same year. Anyway, he goes, the place is leveled. There's just the slab. And of course, he goes, where do you think my parents' TV and dresser are?
About 10 miles inland somewhere.
They're someplace, somewhere, some alligators chewing on the TV or something. But they took them, you know, of course, nobody was there because they totally evacuated. And there might have been somebody there. But the insurance company, of course, all said it was water, not wind, so it's not them.
Always.
Yeah, you know, always. So it took them, I'm going to say, a decade to get like 40 cents on the buck or something. And the place never rebuilt. He goes, I go by there, I'm like, wait a minute, there's the gas station, that must be the place. It looked like a parking lot. It was just gone.
Yeah, the thing is that the surge is just one of those monsters that there's, it's the sea is so vast, and when she gets mad, oh boy.
Yeah.
Yeah,
But
the thing is, though, Chief, is that when you get down to it, what we're all talking about here is, you know, I mean, that sounds kind of esoteric, but it really isn't, because it's all cost on persons' balance sheets, okay, yeah. and on their cash flow statement. And at some point, you get to the point that all of this crazy that governments have tried to prevent anybody from ever having to sit on their own, their own mistakes. And deal with, you know, that really uncomfortable feeling on the backside of your body by spreading it around everybody else. Well, guess what? Now everybody is taking it in the shorts.
Well, you never would have thought that you were going to be taxed for stupidity and government running rates down to 1%, that you were going to be taxed through the Federal Deposit Insurance Corp, because that's your next tax.
Well, but you know what? And people say, oh, well, I'll just use a credit union. Excuse me, you do business every single day with somebody who has no choice.
Right.
Right? So, I mean, you know, you go to buy groceries. The grocer had to do business with one of those places that is now assessing them. And people who think that this can be fixed, let me point something out. if you are one of those institutions, those financial institutions, and we all, you know, I mean, they're all getting pounded right now in the market, and with good cause, you know, PacWest and these other guys.
Well, the big guys aren't any better off, though. That's the problem.
No, they're not. And it, yeah. And the problem is they all originated this paper at 2%, okay? And that's the coupon on that thing for as long as it lasts. And now all of a sudden, I can go take my money and I can go stick it in treasuries at 4.5.
Make that over 5.
Well, it depends on but
six months. Yeah. 6 months. Yeah.
Well, you can go out and you can go get a 4-week bill at 5.5 one or something like that, right? All right.
That's what we do every week. We do every week for our people.
Well, I understand that, Chief. But why? But you know how does a bank that has a portfolio full of stuff that's paying 2, that has a 2% coupon, they can't pay 5? They'll all go bankrupt if they do.
It's the exact same thing that happened in 1980 on a smaller scale. Then the mortgage rate was 6, and all of a sudden they're paying 10.
Right.
Right. And now they're so used to paying people 0 to where people got used to getting 0, never thought they'd actually get any more. They're used to paying people 0 and turning around and giving their money to the government overnight at 1.25, and it was lazy, but it was fun, right? Now all of a sudden, people say, "Where's my 3% in the bank?" I would next week, Carl. Let's go through it more time. I think, and you and I have talked about this. I talk about it probably more with John or Kevin, but we've talked about these unintended consequences of these stupid things people do. We went from separating demand and time deposits at a bank. Now, when people pull 40% of the deposits out in one day. Who thinks that that's now a good idea, that there's no delay on the time deposits? And why are we at zero reserve requirement? And by the way, when it's always a little bit of an issue with me is what, you know, why can't we go back to, what I'm saying is this idea now on TV, of everywhere, I'm not just TV, I keep saying that because those are the guys you listen to, but the idea that somehow or another the deposit should be, insurance should be raised or something. Carl, in my entire lifetime in the financial world, which is a while now, the $100,000 FDIC or $250,000, that was an opiate for the schmoes.
Yeah.
The idea that you ever thought that everything in the system wasn't secure. I mean, at Pullman, we're going to put in $1.5 million payroll on a Thursday. The thought that wasn't good till Friday never crossed anybody's mind.
It does now.
Well, but it shouldn't. The Fed's job is to make sure.
Well, you're right, but you know what? That's not the problem. People are running around, talking heads are all running around saying, well, we have to raise we have to prevent that from being a problem, right? Except that's not the problem.
Right.
The root of the problem is that if, you know, I mean, I was just a little schlub with, you know, 3 dozen employees, but I still had to make sure that cash was sitting in the bank account before the checks got issued. Otherwise,
but thought ever crossed your mind that between the time you gave them the dough and a check got issued, there'd be a problem at the bank.
But Chief, that's not the problem, because here's the thing: if I was sitting in today's world and I can have that cash, I got a $500,000 laying around that I don't need right now. But it's operating cash for the company.
Right.
Okay. All right. Now, I can leave it in the bank, even if it's fully guaranteed. Government says you're never going to lose a penny, even though it's well over $250,000.
Well, for years and years and years, nobody ever did, till the one outfit during 2008.
Well, I get that.
Yeah.
But let's say that the government turns around and changes the rules and says you are absolutely protected. Okay, fine. Except I'm still not going to leave it there because I get 1%.
Right. Oh, yeah. Well,
at the bank, and I get 4 in treasuries.
All right, we have no seconds here, but one quick question. If somebody sends PTI, which, by the way, is happening like every week, somebody sends us $500,000 and says, Dan, go to the auction on Monday. Now, people could do it themselves, but they'd rather have us do it. Yeah. Go to the auction on Monday and get me a 6-month T-bill or 3. I think we're pushing the 6-month pushing. I mean, that's the one we've been getting people. And that money goes to the government, right? Where does the government put it? They must have a bank.
Government spends it.
Well, okay, but I mean, But that but that particular day, it's not like it left the system, right? It's going to a bank the government has.
Well, yeah, I you know, Treasury.
I'm not. That's what I'm saying. I'm not sure, but if it was
they
you,
spend it, they spend it awful fast, though, Chief. If you look at the deficit numbers. I don't think it sits around for very long.
But I'm saying if I, the whole purpose of the Fed is if I had $90 bazillion and I wrote Carl a check for $5 million out of Lakeside Bank, Carl's going to deposit it over at Chase or someplace.
Right.
And at the end of the day, Lakeside might be a little short, and Chase is a little flush. They just borrow one back against the other, and that's
yeah.
The way
it's just a balancing mechanism.
Yeah.
Is the primary purpose. Yes.
So I mean, but when you go to the, you're saying when I give it to the government, it actually leaves the system. But even then, if they're spending out to somebody else, it should go in his bank.
Except there's no money there for the asset base of the bank.
Okay.
All right, because it doesn't sit there.
Right.
But that's – and they can't fix that. There isn't anything you can do now. These people have originated trillions of dollars of loans with a coupon that is fixed until the duration expires, and there's nothing that can be done about it.
Well, it's hard for the Fed to spank somebody for buying stuff that they sold them.
Well, yeah, there's that. And then, well, and then, you know, hey, we're going to pay you for excess reserves,
yeah,
too, right?
Yep. Yeah. Right. What do you say we take a deep dive on this next week? Thank you for the labor stuff. That was good. S&P futures up 32. NASDAQ futures up 79. We're all fixed. Back on Monday, Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTIsecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.